ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्ण। इट गिव्स मी ग्रेट ऑनर एंड प्लेजर टू इनवाइट ऑल दी devotees and guests for the Sunday feast program at Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir this afternoon. Living in the city of Mumbai, within this material world, it is natural that the living entities are bewildered, unsure of as to who is God, what is God, what is our relationship with God, who am I, why am I here, and what is the goal of my life. It is quite natural that if someone goes to a jail, then it is to be understood that such a person is a criminal. Or if someone goes to a beer bar, we do not expect them to ask for lassi or some milk, because such a person has got illicit desires to enjoy alcohol. Similarly, if someone has come into this material world, that person, to a large extent or to a small extent, has a desire to enjoy separately from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. So in this world, people are very bewildered because they want to be separate from God. They do not know exactly who is God. Some people speculate that actually there is no God. God is nowhere. Others try to correct them. No, no, God is everywhere. And when you ask them, where is God? They say, somewhere. Some people behind, you know, these rickshaws you find in Bombay or taxis, they will say, God is love. Or love is God. So Srila Prabhupada said that yes, God is great. But devotional service is the science to understand how great is God. Yes, God is love, but devotional service is to understand the science of how great is this love of the Lord for His devotees. In fact, in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Dhruva Maharaj goes to his mother Suniti, requesting some shelter, some support, some strength, some affection from his dear mother, at that time, she tells him to go into the forest to search for Lord Vishnu, who can fulfill his desires. And then it is explained that Lord Vishnu's heart, Lord Krishna's heart, is so soft, so tender, that it is like the love of millions of mothers. In fact, even in this world, if they want to advertise love, then they advertise a mother carrying a child or a father carrying a child. Like, you know, these LIC ads, security, satisfaction, happiness, then they'll show some mother, some baby, affection, deep affection. However, the love of the Lord is like the mother, like the love of millions of such mothers. And the Lord exchanges emotional affection with his devotees in this way. Thus, the perfection of life for a living entity is to offer these emotions back to the Supreme Lord. In fact, yesterday morning, Govind Prabhu was explaining to us in the Bhagavatam class that emotions, human emotions, if they are not offered to the Lord in love, then these very emotions become perverted and one tries to satisfy them in this world. Thus, love in the heart gets perverted to lust. Appreciation for others becomes perverted to envy. service attitude towards beauty becomes exploitation of the same beautiful object. And in this way, one's life becomes perverted. These very emotions in the human form of life, if offered to the Lord, become purified and become the source of satisfaction. We find in the scriptures that even so-called negative emotions like anger have been incited by the Lord Himself in His devotees. Arjuna, who was so peaceful, compassionate, was incited by Krishna. Again and again in the Bhagavad Gita, we find the phrase, so therefore you stand up and fight. For that, one needs anger. Hanumanji displayed anger, such powerful emotion of anger, and thus destroyed the whole of Lanka. So there is so much scope for the satisfaction of the emotions in the human form of life by surrendering them to the Supreme Lord. If one does not understand this fact, then one's life cannot be full. Then one will create so many philosophies in this world to somehow exist without the Lord. Because violence is the nature of this world. The question is where to apply it in the right way. Just like a doctor sometimes cuts off a boil or cuts off an entire leg which is diseased with cancer to save the whole body. Then people don't go to the police station, you know, putting a FIR or complaint, you know, the doctor cut off my leg. In fact, they pay the doctor and give him regular visits. Does any other part of my body need to be cut up, you know, just so that I can be saved? So, unless we offer our emotions to the Lord and experience the Lord's love for us, one cannot find completeness in the human form of life. And how the Lord deals with His devotees, what kind of love and affection the Lord shows to His devotees, is explained elaborately in the scriptures, just to grab the burning attention of the conditioned soul. Because the conditioned soul has so much love, Srila Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Devotion, that love is like a ray of light. It continues to just go on and on and on and on. It expands as it goes ahead. How much love do we have? If we repose it on anything or anyone of this world, which is temporary, that love cannot be satisfied. Thus the scriptures speak about so much love and affection between the Lord and His devotees, and these descriptions inspire the living entity to somehow or the other take the love of this world, the emotions of this world, and offer them to the Supreme Lord. When the Supreme Lord incarnated into this world in the Treta Yuga as Lord Sri Ramchandra, you know the pastime of how Ravan along with Maricha conspired together and kidnapped Mother Sita away and took her to Lanka. When Maricha in the form of this golden deer took Lord Ram deep and deep into the forest, Lord Ram finally caught up with him, shot him with a deadly arrow and killed him. At that time, Maricha shouted loudly, "Oh Lakshman, Sita, save me, save me." So Ram was wondering, why is Maricha doing like this? And therefore he ran back as fast as he could, meeting Lakshman on the way back to the hut where they resided. Coming back to the hut, Ram found it desolate. His greatest fears had now come true. Sita had been abducted. Ram examined the hut and the surrounding grounds closely. It resembled like a lotus flower chilled by the winter and losing its charm. The trees seemed to cry as they creaked in the wind. The flowers appeared faded and dull, and the deers and the birds were restless and ill at ease. Ram saw nearby that there was kusha grass scattered around, along with the petals which had fallen from Sita's hairs and Sita's garland. He wailed loudly, in pain. Oh, surely Sita has been snatched away. Or perhaps she lies dead somewhere. Or she has gone out playfully and is hiding from me in sport. Or perhaps at this very moment, she is being devoured by some demons who are cutting up open her soft neck and drinking her blood. As Ram ran from tree to tree, his eyes red from sorrow, he appeared almost crazy. He questioned the trees, "O Kadamba, O Bilwa, O Arjuna tree, where is Janaka's frail daughter? Is she alive?" In his madness of grief, he spoke to the animals, the rivers, the sky, the earth itself, the forest and the river deities. Remembering Ravana's frightful form, were petrified with fear and could make no reply. Ram in that situation started rebuking himself. He started thinking, what will I say to Kaushalya? How could he even look at Janaka, the ever truthful monarch? He felt that his life was passing away and he would surely die. What would he say to his father when he would meet him in heaven, died away due to grief? Dashrath would reproach him for not completing his turn of exile and turning out to be a liar. Ram fell weeping to the ground. Such suffering as the loss of a kingdom, separation from one's loved ones, the king's death, and now the loss of Sita. He said, this could be only because of my own past deeds. Thinking like this, Ram tossed about in pain. Lakshman at this time caught hold of Ram and said, my dear brother, do not despair. Men of your caliber are not disturbed or bewildered even in the greatest of calamities. Oh brother, Sita cannot be far away. It's just been an hour before you left this place. Let us search Sita out with full enthusiasm. He explained how grief dries up enthusiasm and enthusiasm dries up grief. If one takes shelter of grief, then all the enthusiasm that one has for performing any activity, even devotional service, that grief sucks away the enthusiasm. And if one takes shelter of enthusiasm, then the ocean of grief is sucked away. Therefore, when one senior devotee, when sannyasi was asked, if you don't feel enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness, what should we do? It's a very common question. It's a regular experience we have from time to time. If we don't feel enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness, what should we do? And he very beautifully answered, he said, then we should act enthusiastic. Because when we act enthusiastic, when the action is performed, then the feeling automatically follows. Generally, the Hollywood and the Bollywood movies, they give us this idea that love is a feeling. Actually, love is a verb, to love. That means it's an action of sacrifice, of empathy, of affection, of understanding. So when one sacrifices for one's beloved, then one experiences the feeling of love. Nowadays, it's a completely opposite understanding. People say, oh, I feel love, therefore I've now fallen in love. Therefore, most of these movies, they show what happens before the marriage. Nowadays, even they have this movie that in Hindi they call it. Because it's all about these feelings, and when the feelings are gone, then naturally the enthusiasm is gone, the love is gone. But actually it's the other way around. It's first the sacrifice, then the feeling, then the experience. So Lakshman inspired Ram that let us go in search of Sita. She must not be far away. Let us act with enthusiasm, and thus this grief will be dried away. As they searched here and there, in a short distance, Ram saw that there was a broken chariot, a bow, and the footprints of a Rakshasa with blood drops around that place. Ram felt cheated. He felt that these Rakshasas had finally made a plan, a conspiracy, and stolen away Sita. Again, Lakshman requested Ram, please check your grief. As he checked his grief, Ram felt consumed by anger. The corner of his eyes turned coppery as he stood holding his bow. Ram proclaimed, the Rakshasa race will soon be extinct. They have taken Sita away, even as she practiced penance and virtue. How did the gods stand by, allowing this to happen? Do they not fear my wrath? Do they think I am powerless? For too long I have been mild and compassionate. Today the world will see a different Ram. Ram roared, giving full vent to his anger. He would fill the heavens with his missiles. With his weapons, he would annihilate the entire creation. All living beings would feel oppressed as he discharged his flaming arrows. The planets would be brought to a standstill. The sun would be obscured and the moon would be brought down from the sky. The mountains would lie crushed to a powder and the oceans would be dried up. If the gods did not bring Sita back, they would find no shelter anywhere in the universe. All the world would be torn to pieces by Ram's arrows and nothing would remain. A blazing fire would rage through in all quarters, leaving total devastation in its wake. Ram, in this fury of anger, tightened his clothes. His lips trembled and he pressed them against his teeth. He looked like Shiva intent at the end of the creation to destroy it. Taking a dreadful arrow from his quiver, placing it upon his bow, he roared, today I shall not be stopped by request or by force. See now, dear Lakshman, as I bring the gods down from the heavens. Lakshman again grabbed Ram's hands and stopped him from releasing his arrow. He said, my dear brother, you are always dedicated towards doing good for all the living entities. Do not abandon your mild nature. With folded hands, Lakshman started begging Ram. You should not destroy the entire world for one person's offense. In fact, the second argument he gave was that whoever abducted Sita obviously must have been a very powerful person. Perhaps no one was able to stop the kidnapping. The gods and the Gandharvas, the rivers, the seas, the mountains, indeed all living beings, Lakshman explained, were not capable of giving offense to you or Lord Ram, any more than the priest at a sacrifice could offend the person for whom the sacrifice was being done for. Lakshman suggested, if we do not find Sita by peaceful means, then Ram could fill the entire universe with his venomous missiles and thus destroy the world. If the earth's rulers immediately resorted to violence when under duress, then what could be expected from the common man? What would the ordinary men do? Ram, happiness and distress, they just flow in quick succession. One should not give way to either, neither rejoice nor grieve for material mundane things. But with a peaceful mind, one should continue to do one's duty. Lakshman looked at Ram in his eyes. He said, oh Ram, you have instructed this to me so many times in the past. Who can teach you, even if he be Brihaspati himself? Great people like you do not give way to grief, even faced with great perils. Please, therefore, spare the world. seek out only the adversary who has stolen Sita. Beseeched by such sweet words, pacified by Lakshman, Ram put down his bow, thanked Lakshman, and then asked him, "Okay, what shall we do next?" Thus Ram and Lakshman started traveling in the forest looking for Sita. Ram experiencing such great pain of separation from his beloved wife. Gradually they met Jatayu. And they realized that it was Jatayu who gave the powerful fight to Ravan and ultimately was lost. Jatayu was the first person to give the clue and the name that it was Ravan who had abducted Sita. When Ram was asking Jatayu, in which direction did he go? Where can I find Ravan? By the time Jatayu could answer, he gave up his breath and left for the spiritual world, the kingdom of God. Eventually, as they kept searching, Ram and Lakshman came towards a big demon, Kabanda. And Kabanda, just before he was killed by Ram and Lakshman, gave them the next clue and said that you should go and find the Vanara king who is now in exile, Sugriva, and make alliance with him. Just before they could meet Sugriva, Lord Ram satisfied the desires of Shabri, that great devotee, and sent her back home, back to Godhead. As they approached the bank of the Pampa River, they came to the foots of the Rishyamukha mountains. As Ram looked at the beautiful scenery, his pain in separation only heightened. Everything around reminded him only of Sita. The peahen's mating dance brought to his mind the way Sita would approach him in love. The fragrant breeze that blew was like the scented breath of his beloved. The yellow champaka flowers resembled her shining silk garment. The bright red tree blossoms looked like the princess's full cheeks. Deer moved about with their mates, piercing Ram's heart as he remembered how he would move about with his beloved in the forests. The white swans reminded Ram of his wife's complexion. Indeed, he saw Sita everywhere. Now one may ask a question. Why did Ram express such separation from Sita like an ordinary man expresses separation of attachment to his beloved in this world? So the Acharyas explain there are some external reasons and there are some internal reasons why the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ram, displays such pastimes of separation. The first reason is explained that the Lord expresses such emotions of love to show that he is not simply an impersonal stone. The Lord is a person. And this personality of Godhead, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the essence of whom is loving reciprocation with his devotees. In fact, the very people who say that one should kill all desires, one should just be what? No, if you add any desire, then it becomes material. Just be. Such people, they ultimately try to say that we have to merge with God and become one with God and lose all our emotions and thus become peaceful, satisfied. Because any desire in this world will lead to attachment, bondage and suffering. However, this very philosophy of trying to be peaceful inspires people to become more attached to this world, more bound to this world and more suffer. And why is that? Because people feel that if going to the spiritual world is just going to be some peace, I don't know what's going to happen over there. Maybe I will lose myself with God or whether I'll be there or not. No clear idea. So such people think, at least I'm able to enjoy in this world now. Let me enjoy to the fullest extent. But when the Supreme Personality himself comes into this world and shows his beautiful pastimes, how he is enjoying in the spiritual world with his devotees, then it captures the attention of the living entity. In fact, Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book that all these fascinating pastimes of romance, terror, murder, treachery, exhibition of opulence, all these pastimes are performed by Krishna just to attract the living entity's mind from all this mundane literature to Krishna's pastimes. The second reason the Lord performs such pastimes of separation is to establish dharma, to show the duty of the wife or the duty of the husband towards the spouse. It's a Vedic injunction that one should be more eager to perform one's duty than to ask for one's rights. In fact, the whole Vedic lifestyle was designed like that. People would be more absorbed and eager to want to know what their duty is and follow their duty rather than ask for the rights and the facilities. Because they knew that duty led to service and rights and facilities led to exploitation. Like for example, Gandhari. When Gandhari was married to Dhritarashtra, now because Dhritarashtra was blind, she decided to put a blindfold on her own eyes. Why was that? To make sure that she would never feel proud that she is better than her husband, and thus she would insult or offend her husband. So just to save herself from that pride, to be able to do the duties of a wife perfectly, she blindfolded herself for life. Because duty was considered most important. In fact, the scriptures explain that if one performs his or her duties for 100 lifetimes of Varanashram, 100 lifetimes, if one performs perfect Varanashram duties, then one becomes qualified to become Brahma. It is not explained that if you get all the rights and the facilities of a Brahmana or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya, then one becomes Brahma. No, it is explained if one does one duties, in spite of all the obstacles, for 100 lifetimes, then one automatically becomes Brahma. That's the power of performing duty. In fact, to perform one's duty, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, one has to tolerate. Tam stitikshaswa bharata. Krishna says that happiness and distress in this world will come. Agama apaino anityas. They come, they remain for some time, and then they go away. Just like the winter season has gone, we were so eagerly waiting for the summer. Now the summer is here, so hot. So we are waiting for the rainy season. And then gradually in the rainy season, one will wait. When will the clouds go away? And then again, we shall be able to see the sky. So many difficulties and obstacles will come in this world. They will come and they will go. But a man of intelligence is steadfast in performing the duty. And what is the advantage of performing the duty? Yam hi na vyatayante te purusham purusha rishabha samas dukkha sukham dhiram somratatvaya kalpate. It is explained that if one performs one duty, then one even enters into the abode of deathlessness. So amritatvaya, one goes beyond mrita, beyond death, back to the spiritual world, in the kingdom of God. So to establish this point of how a husband must protect one's wife, Lord Ram was performing these pastimes to somehow or the other find Sita Devi, destroy the Ravanas and bring her back. And then the third external reason, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purports in the 9th canto, is to show what happens to a conditioned soul if he becomes too much attached to the opposite gender. There is so much pain, so much feelings of suffering when one is separated from one's beloved in this material world. Therefore, one should not become too much attached. So these three external reasons are explained. Number one, to show that the Lord is not impersonal, the Lord expresses such loving affection and emotions when he comes to deal with his devotees and show it to the conditioned souls in this world. The second reason is to establish dharma. We saw how Gandhari, by performing her dharma, became celebrated as one of the seven chaste ladies, at par with even Sita Devi, Draupadi, etc. And the third reason is to show what happens to a conditioned soul when he or she becomes too much attached to the people of this world. There is also an internal reason why the Lord performs these pastimes. In fact, the internal reason explained is that the Lord wants to show that love in separation is a much higher experience of love, which is experienced in attachment. In fact, Shamanandru was giving this example long years back in the Brahmachari class, that if there is a poor man, and this poor man finds some gold, some diamond, some riches, then the person becomes very much attached because he never had them. There was no taste of that. There was no experience of it. But once, if one experiences riches, especially if someone comes from a poor background, then that attachment is very strong. And if those riches are lost, then the feeling of separation from those riches is even more intense. Because one had achieved it with great labor or with some accident. Similarly, if one is hungry, then one feels the pangs of hunger. But if one tastes some tasty food, and if it's only limited, you know, sometimes there's limited serving of sweet. As soon as we look at the sweet, then we ask, first question we ask, if we like it, we ask the first question, is it limited? So if very little sweet is given, just a few drops, and one tastes that, there's already hunger. That taste actually increases the hunger, and the separation from that sweet is a very intense experience in the mind. So the Lord is trying to explain how, if we want to love Him, then loving Him in separation is a much greater opportunity in two ways. Number one, because the love is more intense in separation. And number two, there is very little chance of becoming proud. When one is in the association of the Lord, then it's very natural, or it's possible, that one may feel proud. Like I had this practical experience. A few weeks back, we had a celebration in our temple campus where we had invited many pious people, and we spoke in Gujarati to the neighboring pious people. And believe us, at least 10 people after the program came up to me and said, "Oh, you spoke so nicely in Gujarati. I felt just like I had experienced Krishna that day." And each person had a different experience of Krishna. "I saw Krishna in my dream." One person said, "I saw Krishna in the train." He actually said that. "When I was squeezed in the local Bombay trains and I was suffering very much, I suddenly had an experience of Krishna and I felt so nice." And that same experience we felt when we heard about Krishna. So it's natural that if a person is a little pious, or if a person is not suffering too much in the world, then one may feel, "Oh, I know Krishna." And then such a person may become proud and not humbly surrender one's head at the feet of the devotees. So the Lord comes into this world. The internal reason to show these pastimes of separation is to teach us a lesson, that one should approach the Lord not with pride, that, "Oh, it's only me and the Lord directly," but in the mood of separation, that "I am lost, I am fallen, and I am gone. But by the mercy of the Lord and His devotees, I have hope that I can approach the Lord." In fact, in the spiritual world, this love and separation is the highest experience. So much so that the gopis in Vrindavan, when they are separated from Lord Krishna, they just do not want to hear about Krishna. They are remembering Krishna very deeply, but somehow or the other, that remembrance is bringing them so much pain of separation that they want to forget Him. Now, externally speaking, the separation of a conditioned soul in this world for His beloved, and the pain that we see the devotees experience for the Lord, externally it seems the same. But Madan Gopal Prabhu was giving a very nice example the other day. It's like drinking hot sugarcane juice. Now, externally, somebody drinking hot water and their mouth being burnt, and somebody drinking hot sugarcane juice, externally seeing it may look the same. But the person who has the hot water in the glass will leave the glass. The glass will drop to the ground and the water will be spilled. But the person who is drinking hot sugarcane juice is sweet. And if something is sweet and it's a little warm, hot, then it stings even deeper in the tongue. The taste goes very deep. It's so deep that one just doesn't want to give it up. In fact, one holds on to it very tight. So there are two experiences. The heat, which carries the sweet even more deeper, and the experience of sweetness, which actually brings further attraction towards the object. So externally, it seems that the devotees are suffering, that Lord Ram is suffering over here. Oh, Mother Sita is lost. But internally, the internal reason is that there is the highest of ecstasies. And therefore, when Uddhav, he tries to pacify the devotees in Vrindavan, the gopis especially, at that time they say, don't tell us about this Krishna. And they start chastising Krishna. Mrigayuripa kapindram vivyade lupta dharma striya makrita virupam srijita kamayanam balim api balim matva veshtava tvangshavadyas tadalamasita sakhyer dostyajat tatkratarthah tatkatharthah. They say that just like a hunter, this Krishna one time cruelly shot the king of the monkeys from behind the bushes, or conquered by a woman, he disfigured the face of another woman. Striya akrita virupam strijita kamayanam. Being attracted to one woman, Sita, he disfigured the face of another woman, Surpanakha. In fact, consumed by the gifts of Bali Maharaj, he became so greedy that not only he captured Bali, but he tied him by thick ropes, just like an animal. Bali mapi bali matva veshtava dvangshavadyas. Therefore, let us give up friendship of this cheater. Tadalam asita sakhyer dustyajas. But even though we want to give up friendship of this cheater, we cannot stop hearing about him. Dustyajas tat kathartha. Hearing about him brings such sweetness. So although externally it seems that because of suffering separation, they are cursing the Lord. They are finding faults with the Lord. But still, in that finding of faults also, they experience great joy and ecstasy. When materialistic people find faults with the Lord, they want to show that the Lord is not someone to whom we should surrender. And thus they want to go away from the Lord. Whereas the devotees, even when they find fault with the Lord, those faults are simply instruments to increase their love for the Lord. So thus, the internal reason that the Lord shows is to express this mood of separation. When Sugriva, who was sitting with his monkey attendants on top of the Rishyamukha mountains, heard Ram's cries, looked around, he saw these two powerful princes at the edge of the lake. They had huge bows and swords, which struck fear in his heart, and he started asking his companions, what should I do? These five great apes who were there were actually the incarnation of gods, and they belonged to the celestial race of the Ravanas, who sat together and discussed. They said, okay, let us ascend to the higher peaks of these mountains and let us watch from there what these two men have come to do. Seeing these apes jumping about the side of the mountains, breaking large trees with their powerful arms, tigers and leopards fled away in fear. When they reached the highest peaks, Hanuman told Sugriv, why are you fearing so much? I do not see Vali anywhere. You have fear of Vali, who might come here to kill you, but Vali cannot come here because of the sage Matanga's curse. Sugriva could not be pacified easily. He said, so many times in the past, Vali has sent enemies to kill me. I cannot stay here in peace. Probably these two men have also been sent by Vali and they have come here to kill me. Hanuman, you please go ahead and find out who are these two men and why have they come here. Hanuman ji, dressed as a Brahmana, approached these two personalities, prostrated himself at their feet and spoke some sweet words. He said, what brings you two shining ascetics to this region? You appear like a pair of royal sages, fit to rule the whole world. Your massive bows, they glow like rainbows. Your swords appear dreadful. Your arms are like trunks of mighty elephants. Yet, you are dressed like brahmanas. What do you search about this lake? You seem mysterious like the sun god or the moon god descended together, illuminating this large mountain by your divine presence here. This great monkey had deep devotion to Lord Vishnu within his heart, and he felt his love for the Lord deepening as he closely looked at the features of Lord Ram. Thus, he decided to reveal his identity. And he explained that actually, I am Hanuman, the attendant of Sugriva. Ram told Lakshman that my heart is moved by this noble Vanara's speech. It seems that he has deeply studied Sanskrit. His grammar is so faultless, and his speech is delivered in such a gentle manner that it will win the heart of even an enemy who has come with an upraised sword. Lakshman was told by Ram that since Hanuman has now revealed his identity, you can also reveal to him our identity. And Lakshman, with tears in his eyes, started narrating how he and Lord Ram had been banished from the kingdom of Ayodhya, were in exile for so many years in the forests. And now, because Ram's wife Sita had been abducted, they were traveling to search for Sita. Finally, Lakshman explained how Kabanda, the demon, had told them to make an alliance with Sugriva, who would be found at the Rishyamukha mountains. Hanuman, in great joy, he requested Ram and Lakshman to sit on his shoulders, and he jumped, carried them very quickly to Sugriva. When Sugriva looked at these two brothers, he was awed by their brilliance and obvious power. He requested an alliance of friendship. Hanuman lit fire, chanted the sacred mantras. Sugriva and Ram went clockwise around the sacred fire, hand in hand. And Hanuman announced, may this friendship live forever. Now our joys and sorrows are one. After this friendship was established, Hanuman, he broke a huge bow of a sal tree, a big branch, and he requested Lord Ram to sit. And on another branch of a sandalwood tree, he requested Lakshman to sit. And thus, they began a sweet conversation. Sugriva told his whole story, and he requested Lord Ram, please give me security at your feet. Ram said, do not fear. That immoral monkey will soon lie dead, killed by my infallible arrows. You will see Vali struck down and lying on the earth like a shattered mountain very soon. Sugriva felt very comforted and certain that he would now regain his wife and his kingdom. Thus Sugriva assured Ram that he would help along with all the monkeys to find Sita. Whether she was in the depths of the bowels of the earth or in the highest vaults of heaven, hidden anywhere, you should know for sure, he said, that neither the gods nor the demons can hold Sita more than a man can digest poisonous food. Thus making such a promise, they went ahead to have their meal. Hanuman cooked a nice feast made from forest roots and whatever best fruits were available. After the meal, they again began to talk. Sugriva started explaining that not long ago, a great Rakshasa was flying overhead, clutching a crying lady. He had heard the plaintive cries of that lady, O Ram, O Lakshman, please help me. In fact, I saw that princess wiggling like a snake in the hands of that demon. She spotted us over here, and therefore she tied some of her jewels in her cloth and dropped it right here. Ram grasped the monkey's hand. You saw my beloved Sita? Where are those jewels? Quickly bring them here. Sugriv, he went deep into the cave and brought out the jewels. The brilliant jewels shone in the bright sunshine in front of Ram's eyes. Thinking of his kidnapped wife, he began to hiss like a serpent in a hole. And Ram told Lakshman, see these beautiful jewels. These all belong to Sita. These are Sita's jewels. And Lakshman, when he was going through all these jewels, it seemed that he could hardly recognize any one of them. And thus Lakshman spoke, Nayam janami keyure, Nayam janami kankane, Nupure vahi janami, Nityam padabhi vandanat. He said, I do not recognize these earrings. I do not recognize the nose rings of Mother Sita. Nayam janami keyure or kankane. Even the hand jewels, I do not recognize them. But I do recognize these jewels at the lotus feet of Mother Sita. Nupureva hi janami. I can recognize them. Why? Nityam padabhi vandanat. Because always I was meditating. Padabhi vandanat. I was watching only at the lotus feet of Sita Devi. Ram stood up quickly and spoke. Tell me, where is that demon who has taken Sita? I shall dispatch him to death's abode. Right now, at this very day, I shall extinguish the entire Rakshas dynasty. Sugriva's head fell. But he vowed that very soon they would find the Rakshasa's abode. Ram also made a promise that he would finish Vali. And thus, Ram requested Sugriva, you please tell me what are the strengths and weaknesses of Vali. Thus, I shall understand him and be able to destroy him. Sugriv started explaining that Vali and I, we were the two sons of Rikshraj, the king of the monkeys. After the king died, Vali, who is the elder brother, was put on the throne. And I became his subservient, ready to fulfill any instruction. Sugriv started describing the power of Vali. He said, one time, there was a demon called Mayavi who came to Kiskindha Kshetra. And there was a dispute between Vali and this Mayavi over a woman. Mayavi, bellowing fiercely, challenged Vali to a fight. So Vali and Sugriva ran out the city gates to face this challenge. When Mayavi saw these two huge mountainous monkeys coming out of the gates, he ran away. And in great speed, he ran into a huge hole into the earth. So Vali told Sugriva, you stand outside this hole. I shall enter this hole, catch this Mayavi demon and destroy him. Sugriva, following the order, for one entire year stood outside the hole, but could not hear anything happening inside. After that entire year, one day, Sugriv heard huge sounds of demons crying and shouting. But he could hear no sound of Vali. And then he could see foaming blood bubbling out of that hole. Fearing the worst, that Vali was dead, Sugriv, he took a huge boulder to shut off that hole so that these demons at least would not be able to come out. And thus, went back to the kingdom and told the entire story. When Sugriv entered the kingdom, the ministers convinced him, although Vali was very reluctant, to take up the throne, and thus Sugriv was coronated as the next king. Very soon, Vali appeared on the scene. And when Vali saw Sugriv sitting on the throne, he was furious. He chained all the ministers and started chastising Sugriv. Sugriv humbly came down from the throne, put his head at the feet of Vali, and put the throne right next to his feet. But Vali was furious. Vali was very angry. He threw Sugriv out, kidnapped his wife, and left Sugriv only with a single cloth. In fact, much later, when Vali was shot by the arrow of Lord Ram, at that time, Vali in remorse spoke a very interesting thing. Vali told Sugriv, "Please, my dear Sugriv, forgive me. Actually, all this while, somehow in my heart, I had always felt that I should not bear enmity with you, because your offense was not ill-intended. In fact, it was not a very big offense. And you were humble. You were ready to surrender. Somehow, I was always feeling that I must re-establish my relationship with you. But I just could not do it. I should have forgiven you for your minor offense. And today, I am reaping the result of not forgiving you." One interesting thing about forgiveness is that when we actually decide to forgive someone and we really from the deep core of our heart forgive that person, the experience we will get is that we need to be forgiven ourselves. In fact, we recently had this forgiveness seminar and most of the devotees who had actually participated in the seminar and done the homework or forgiving the people who had hurt them the most, when they came back and spoke their realizations, almost each and every one of them, when they had actually approached that person who had offended them to forgive that person, what they actually spoke was, "Please forgive me. For a long time I was bearing enmity with you. For a long time I was carrying this grudge against you. Somehow today, I am giving up this grudge. I am giving up this enmity that I am bearing towards you. Please forgive me for holding it." So the beauty about forgiveness is that the Lord within our heart actually tells us, do not carry these negative emotions. Do not carry this resentment. Do not carry this grudge. That person did it to you that day, but you are reliving it every moment by remembering those moments when you were offended. So Vali actually spoke up that I really wanted to forgive you, but today I am realizing that it was my mistake. So you please forgive me. Ram spoke to the emotional Sugriv. He said, "I will soon dispel your grief at losing your wife. O king of the monkeys, even as the sun dispels the morning mist and creates clarity all around." Sugriv felt that Ram's powerful frame could subdue the mightiest of warriors. But Vali was not an ordinary warrior. In fact, Sugriv explained that each day at the rising of the sun, Vali for exercise would stride from the eastern ocean to the western ocean and from there to the northern ocean all the way to the southern ocean just for some stretching. Now some of us who exercise and struggle with these Kali Yuga bodies to stretch, we know how difficult it is. So we can imagine what Vali's strength must be, because he needed that space to stretch for exercise. In fact, he started explaining Vali's encounter with a celestial demon called Dundubi, who appeared in the form of a terrible buffalo and had the strength of 10,000 elephants. He was looking for opponents strong enough for him to challenge. Therefore, he went to the god of the seas and the demon challenged him to battle. The ocean gods, they refused. They said, "We are not competent to fight with you." So therefore, they sent him to Himavan, the king of the mountains, Himalayas. Even he declined. He said, "Sorry, I am simply a shelter of the sages over here. I am not so strong enough to fight with you. You are so powerful. Please, I decline to fight." Angrily, Dundubi roared and demanded, "Who could possibly face him now?" Himavan directed him to Vali at Kishkindha Kshetra. The furious demon, still in the form of a buffalo, rushed towards Vali's city. He appeared like a black cloud racing through the skies in the rainy season. Dundubi arrived at the gates of Kishkindha and thundered like a drum, violently being beaten. The sound reverberated for miles and it broke down all the surrounding trees. Vali at that time was enjoying in the palace with his wives, drunk in passion,
When he heard the sound, he was reddened in anger. Intolerant by nature, the sound of the demon maddened him too much. He ran out of the palace shouting. The demon laughed loudly. He said, "Oh, you are Vali. You should not challenge me in front of these ladies. Fight with all your might today and I shall kill you. Or if you want, you may remain with your wives for one night and we shall fight tomorrow. Because it is improper to fight with someone who is drunk or blinded by passion. Return to your city, Vali. Gaze upon it for one last time. Say fond farewells to your relatives and dear ones. Install your son on the throne and then come out for battle tomorrow. For soon you shall be dead, lying upon the earth." Vali laughed to hear this arrogant boasting. He sent his wives back to the city and he said, "Oh Dundubi, do not make excuses to hide your fear seeing my form. We shall fight right now." Vali tightened his cloth and stood like a mountain in front of Dundubi. The demon roared, lowered his horns and charged furiously at Vali. The monkey at once seized the horns of the demon, swung him around and threw him through the ground. Blood streams poured out of his ears. Still he got up and charged Vali, standing on his hind legs, pounding Vali with his horns. Vali stood firm. Vali struck the demon with fists, knees, hands, rocks, with his feet, and gradually overpowered the exhausted Dundubi. Vali took hold of his horns, dashed him to the ground with great force, whirled the lifeless demon around, and tossed him to a distance 8 miles away. As he flew, the large body of Dundubi, which was smashed and cracked at various places, allowed huge amounts of blood to flow out. Some parts of this blood fell upon the sage Matanga Rishi's ashram, who opened his eyes and thought, "Who has done this foolish act?" and pronounced a curse. "That foolish monkey who has performed this act, I curse him, that if he comes in even 4 kilometer radius of my ashram, he shall die. And if his ministers come here, then they shall turn to stone for thousands of years." Thus Sugriv explained why Vali did not dare to come to the Rishyamukha mountains. In a few moments, Sugriv pointed to what appeared to be a massive heap of white shining rocks. And he said, "Here are Dundubi's bones tossed away by Vali. Even now, these bones can hardly be moved by any person." All this while, when Sugriv was glorifying Vali, Lakshman was having a good laugh. He was laughing contemptuously and said, "Oh Sugriv, I have still not heard anything yet to even indicate that this brother of yours is formidable to even face Ram. Do you think Ram cannot satisfy any feat which will equal Vali?" Sugriv assured Lakshman that, "I am convinced by Ram's prowess, but I have not seen demonstration of his power. While on many occasions he has seen Vali's power." Ram laughed again and he playfully just slightly kicked at these bones and flicked them into the sky. The skeleton flew high out of sight and dropped 80 kilometers away. Sugriva, seeing these bones vanish, was impressed. But still he had a doubt. He said, "These are still the dry bones. When Vali hurled that demon, he was full of carcass. That demon's carcass was full of blood, flesh, and was heavy. There is another test which I request, my dear Lord Ram, for you to fulfill." Sugriv showed Ram 7 sal trees, each of which was greater than 30 arms length in diameter. And said, "Vali has broken many such trees in the past." Ram smilingly took a bow, strung it to his bow, placing it on the string, took a clear aim and shot this arrow cleanly through all the 7 trees. The arrow pierced itself into the ground, went to the subterranean regions, killed all the demons over there, rushed itself back, forced out of the ground and entered into the quiver of Lord Ram. Sugriva was astounded. He was astonished. He fell flat at Ram's feet. Kneeling in front of Lord Ram, he said, "You could kill with your arrows both the gods and the demons combined together. With you as my ally, my grief is totally dried up. Oh Ram, let us go quickly and make short work of Vali today." Immediately, "Let us go to Kishkindha Kshetra." Ram told Sugriva that "You go and challenge Vali. Let him come out of the city gates. And Lakshman and I will be behind the bushes. When we see Vali coming out like the sun coming out of the hills from the eastern region, we will shoot him to death." As soon as Sugriv approached the gates of Kishkindha Kshetra, he roared a challenge to Vali to come out and fight. A tumultuous and terrible battle resumed between Vali and Sugriva, which resembled like the Mars and the Mercury fighting in the heavens. Blinded by anger, they threw blows at each other like thunderbolts. Striking with fists, palms, feet, they pummeled each other, screaming with fury, both the monkeys grabbing each other's flesh. The two monkeys resembled like the twin Ashwini Kumars so closely that Ram could not distinguish who is who, and thus he did not release the arrows. Gradually, Vali got the upper hand. He battered Sugriv so badly. Sugriv ran away from there, soaked in his own blood, towards the Rishyamukha mountains. And Vali gave him a good chase. Vali just stopped outside the forest where Matanga Rishi's ashram was there. And sarcastically told Sugriv, "Today you have been spared of your life. Next time if I see you, I'll give you a thrashing which will be much more than this one." And in this way, he challenged Sugriva to come further back to battle. But Sugriva, without turning behind, ran away into his cave to get some break and rest. When Sugriva saw Ram over there, he surprisingly looked at Ram and he said, "Why did you not truthfully tell me your intentions? If you did not intend to kill Vali, you should have told me. I would not have moved one step outside my cave." Seeing Sugriva's condition, Ram consoled him. And he suggested that "you again go and challenge Vali." Sugriva was so scared, he would not hear one word of Lord Ram. Lord Ram gave him conviction, gave him strength. He said, "This time, I will create a distinctive mark so that I will know you separately and differently from Vali." And thus, Ram requested Lakshman to create a distinctive mark to Sugriva. Devotees explain that similarly, the living entity is lost from the Lord into this world. But when the living entity sincerely wants to follow the instructions of the Lord, to search out the Lord, then the Lord tells his representative to go and mark him, to give him initiation, to give him direction so that the Lord will accept him as a part of his inner circle. In this way, Lakshman gave Sugriv a flower garland, and this time Sugriv again went back towards the gates of Kishkindha. He looked behind at Ram, still fearful, clearly remembering the beating that he had received from Vali, and he was still shaking. Ram saw Sugriva's anxious expression, put his hand on his shoulder and said, "Do not hesitate. This shall be Vali's last battle, and indeed his last day on earth. I have never uttered a falsehood, even though I have been in adversity for such a long time. Let go your might. Shout with all fury, O Sugriva. Invite Vali to battle." While the two princes remained concealed in the clump of bushes behind, Sugriv again began to challenge. His roar was so loud and powerful, it seared through the air pitilessly. Animals fled in confusion in all directions, just like women would flee when they would be attacked by men due to the failure of the leaders to protect them. Birds drop from the sky just as gods fall from the heaven at the end of their lifetime. As Sugriva emitted his fierce cry, he sounded like the ocean shouting, lashed by the gales of winds. Vali, who was in the women's chambers, was wondering, surprised, that is Sugriva not satisfied with this one thrashing that I just gave him recently? Today that arrogant monkey will have no escape. With his lips trembling, his eyes turning crimson, his teeth grinding, he leapt from his bed towards the door, ready to attack Sugriva. His intelligent wife Tara, she approached Vali and said, "Vali, shake off your anger. Think with your intelligence. You are so much more powerful than Sugriva, and still that person stands fearlessly calling you to battle, roaring like a monsoon cloud. Surely there must be a powerful ally. In fact, I have heard from Angad that he has made friends with Ram and Lakshman, and they are out to kill you. Please, please invite Sugriva, make friends with him, make allies with him, and make him the prince regent. Thus pacify Ram and Lakshman, otherwise danger may befall you." Gripped by death, Vali would not accept his wife's wise words. Vali said, "I know these two princes, Ram and Lakshman. They are devoted to virtue. They would never sin by killing an innocent person like me. They would never interfere with a fair fight. You stay here. I am going to teach Sugriva a lesson today that he shall never forget in his life." Tara bowed her head, praying for her husband, sorrowfully entered back into her chambers. Vali, filled with rage, breathing heavily, raised his fists as he furiously charged towards his brother. Vali shouted. He said, "This iron-like fist, hurled at you like a mace, will return only after taking your life." Attacked by the swinging fists of Vali, Sugriva started vomiting blood and looked like a mountain cascading red oxide on its sides. Sugriva took up a big, huge sal tree and whacked it on Vali's head, who started tossing like a ship on an ocean. Gradually, Sugriva became weaker and weaker and became scared that his life may be lost. He started looking around. "Where is Ram? Ram?" At that time, Lord Ram swiftly placed an arrow on his bow, released it, resembling like the crash of a thunder. This arrow sped like lightning, hit Vali in the chest, which sounded another thunderclap. Vali fell to the ground like a chopped tree, uttering a great cry. He lay unconscious, bathed in his own blood. But Vali did not die, because he was wearing a golden chain which was given by Indra to him, which would protect the life of the person who was wearing it. Lying there amongst his scattered garments and his shining ornaments, the glowing arrow of Lord Ram on his chest, Vali appeared like a beautiful banner which has been chopped and had fallen to the ground. Ram and Lakshman approached him, slowly walking towards Vali. Vali opened his eyes and saw the beautiful smiling face of Ram. Thus, Vali started chastising him. Vali started speaking very harsh words. He said, "I had heard that you are a righteous king and a hero, devoted to dharma and compassionate. Little did I realize that you are a vile wretch, like a well covered with weeds. Your sinful act has revealed your sinful heart." So the first thing that Vali accused Lord Ram was of being sinful, not a pious great hero that he thought he was. Vali, gasping for his breath, went on. The second accusation that Vali made to Lord Ram is, I don't understand why you acted like this. What gain will you get by killing a monkey, a mere monkey living in the forest on roots and fruits? In fact, the scriptures condemn eating the flesh of a monkey and using the skin of a monkey. Surely there was no reason for killing me. You will be condemned and you will go to hell. Thus, Wali was asking, what was the reason? I don't understand why you have killed me. My flesh is of no use to you. My skin is of no use to you. And I am a simple monkey living in the forest. For committing this sin, you will go to hell. A similar pastime comes in the Mahabharata when Karna was fighting with Arjuna. In the Mahabharata, we find that after so many days of battle, Duryodhan's last hope was Karna. And Arjuna knew that as long as Karna lived, the battle would not be fully won. When Arjuna and Karna came face to face, there was a powerful duel. All the Kauravas stopped fighting. The gods in the heavens stopped to watch. After a massive battle, at one point, Karna's wheel, the chariot wheel, got stuck into the ground. Karna wept in frustration. He told Arjuna, wait a moment till I extract my wheel from the ground. Do not cherish thoughts which are entertained by cowards. Remember virtue, O Arjuna, the codes of warfare, and just hold off your attack till I pick out this wheel from the ground. Hearing this agonizing plea, Krishna smiled and replied. He said, it is fortunate indeed, O Karna, that you remember virtue. Men in distress almost always blame providence, forgetting their own evil deeds. So the Lord is chastising Karna that, you fool, in your time of suffering, it is very natural for you to blame providence, to curse others and blame them for your problems, forgetting your own misdeeds of the past. Where or Karna, Lord Krishna started chastising him. Where, O Karna, was your virtue when Draupadi was brought weeping into the Kuru assembly? Where was it when Yudhishthir was robbed of his kingdom? When he asked for it to be returned after spending 13 years in exile, did your virtue suggest it to be returned to him? Was it your virtue that conspired to set fire to the wax house in Varnavrat? Oh dear Karna, did virtue urge you to laughingly say to Draupadi, oh lady, now you choose another husband? Was it that same virtue that ordered Dushasan to strip her naked? Oh Karna, when you and other six heroes surrounded the boy Abhimanyu, did virtue enter your mind? Karna's head fell and he made no reply. Krishna continued, if it was virtue acting on all these occasions, then do not waste your time summoning it now. You wish to practice piety today, but you will not escape with your life. O Arjuna, strike Karna down with your celestial weapons. So we find that demons and demoniac personalities, when faced with reversals, when faced with problems and challenges, very naturally find many situations, persons, and if ultimately no one, then God to blame for their suffering. In fact, one of the tests that a devotee shall pass through before going back home, back to Godhead, to show that the devotee is really perfectly pure and qualified to go back to Godhead, is when a devotee goes through suffering. In the 10th canto, Brahmaji explains, what is the consciousness of that devotee? Tattenu kampam sushamikshamano bunjanaivatmakritam vipakam hridvagvapurbir vidadan namaste.
Jive tayo mukti pade sadaya bhak. It is explained that such a devotee will take distress as a great opportunity, remembering it as one's past deeds. Such huge sinful deeds have been crushed into small tiny reactions by the Lord. Oh, so much mercy. Tatte anukampa. This is the mercy of the Lord. So it's a golden opportunity. Practicing devotees, when we hear these verses, then we remember, oh, I went through so much suffering. Oh, it was a great opportunity. Thank you, my Lord, for giving me that suffering. But the time gap when we are actually suffering and we thank the Lord is much greater in the beginning. When we are happy, peaceful, things are all okay, then we can look back at our suffering and say, okay, thank you, my Lord. Maybe it was something useful for me at that time. But here the Lord, Brahmaji is explaining that while the devotee is suffering, the devotee experiences the Lord's mercy and with his heart, body and mind offers prayers to the Lord. And thus, liberation becomes his birthright. The third accusation Vali makes to Lord Ram is, how can you call yourself a Kshatriya when you kill someone who's engaged in a fair fight with somebody else? I have no enmity with you. I did not attack you. I have no harm towards you. I did not attack anyone in your kingdom. What merit will you acquire? What merit did you acquire by striking me unfairly? That too from behind the bushes. How will you justify this action in front of righteous men? Very intelligently, Vali is chastising Lord Ram. He is telling Lord Ram that you cannot justify this action in front of righteous men. That means I am the righteous person and you are wrong. And birds of a feather flock together. So because you are wicked, therefore you will naturally be surrounded by wicked men. But if you come in front of righteous men, you shall not be able to justify your actions. If you would have fought honestly, Vali said, it would be you lying here, not me. You shot your arrow from behind, just like a snake attacks a sleeping man. I challenge you to justify this shameful act. Lord Ram smiled and spoke to Vali. Many times in distress, or even otherwise, when the conditioned soul doesn't want to surrender to the Lord, finds faults. And many times people ask us this question, why did Lord Ram kill Vali? And that too from behind the bushes. Lord Ram himself starts explaining. And then the acharyas give such wonderful purports as to why Lord Ram actually performed this act. Lord Ram said, you frivolous monkey, because of your uncontrolled mind, you can never understand the codes of dharma. And therefore, you act immorally. Lord Ram said that we, the kings of the Ikshvaku dynasty, have the right over the entire earth to punish the wrong and to reward the right. It is you actually who acted sinfully. Ram gives the first argument. Because you kidnapped Ruma, the wife of Sugriva. In fact, death is the proper punishment for one who has improper relationships with one's daughter-in-law, one sister, or the wife of a younger brother. Thus, you deserve to die at my hands. The second argument Lord Ram gives is, it is an accepted practice that while hunting, Kshatriyas release arrows at inattentive animals from behind. And you being a monkey, there is not the slightest fault. The acharyas explain so many other reasons why Lord Ram actually killed Vali. In fact, one class Govind Prabhu gave many months back in a Wednesday program, he was explaining how criminals cannot demand a fair fight. The very fact that Vali was demanding a fair fight, he was wrong in his demand. If the police breaks the speed limit at 120 kilometers per hour to catch the thief who is traveling at 80 kilometers per hour, then nobody can blame the police. You know, you have also broken the speed limit. In fact, if one accuses the police, that means one is in the party of the demons. That's why nowadays, you know, even when these serials come, Ramayana and Mahabharata, they glorify the demons. People will remember the demons very much. Mama Shri, Bhanje, you know. And Arjun, Yudhishthir, they will be seen as small, wimpy figures, you know, just somewhere. and the Lord will be shown as some cunning figure, you know. Because the demons are glorified, you know. And they will write books also. Oh, poor Karna. You know, he lost the battle and he was unrighteously killed. Anyway, if one even asks this question that the Lord was wrong, that means one is taking the party of the demons. Because the police will hide and shoot in encounters at sight, especially if there are criminals. Another reason explained by the Acharyas, Srila Madhvacharya says, is that if Ram would have come face to face and fought with Vali, then according to Brahma's boon, Vali would have got half the strength of Ram. Because Brahma had given a boon that anyone who fights with Vali, Vali will get half the strength of that person. Of course, Lord Ram is the supreme personality of Godhead. Even if Vali got the strength of Lord Ram, he would not have been able to handle Lord Ram's strength. Gunther was telling the story of how Ashwatthama one time requested Krishna. He said, I will give you a Brahmastra and you please give me your Sudarshan Chakra. Let's exchange offer, you know, barter. Lord Krishna told him, you keep your Brahmastra, I will just give you a taste of my Sudarshan. You know. And when Lord Krishna released his Sudarshan, when it touched the fingertips of Ashwatthama, it was so excruciating for him. He said, please take it back, please take it back, I can't handle it. So in this way, could not even handle the Lord's power. Another interesting thing Madhvacharya explains is that Vali had committed the same offense that Ravan had committed. Ravan had abducted somebody's wife. Vali had also abducted somebody's wife. Now Madhvacharya explains that Vali was actually a devotee of Lord Ram. In fact, even a greater devotee of Lord Ram than Sugriv himself. So if Lord Ram would have come face to face, then Vali would have immediately surrendered. And Vali would have understood that it was Ravan who has stolen Sita. Vali would have immediately stormed into Lanka, hammered Ravan and brought Mother Sita back. Because once previously, Ravan had actually approached Vali when Vali was performing his sandhya. And seeing Ravan coming from behind, Vali just took a short turn and caught Ravan with his arms. Finishing his sandhya in one direction, Vali jumped to the opposite direction. From the east to the west, and then to the north, and finally to the south. And after finishing his duties, he released Ravan and said, welcome. How can I serve you? Is there something you had? It's just that I was a little busy and I thought I should keep you with me so that, you know. Ravan just decided to make allies with Vali. So if Vali would have come to know that Ravan had done something like this, Vali would have smashed Ravan. But then, people would accuse Lord Ram of a greater crime. Already people are accusing Lord Ram that he shot Vali from behind, which is most bona fide for a Kshatriya to do to an animal. If he would have taken help of Vali to get Sita back, then people would accuse you took up help of a person who had performed adharma himself to get your wife back, and that would be a greater adharma. The Lord wanted to show that both his shastra and his shastra purify. The Lord's scriptures, which he gives to the conditioned soul, they also purify when heard through oral reception submissively from the great souls. And the Lord's weapons, his shastra, they also purify. So when the Lord's arrow entered into Vali's heart, they purified him of all his contaminations. And thus, Lord Ram came forward and asked Vali another question. He said, Vali, if you like, I can spare you of your life. I can forgive you and give you your life back. Vali said, oh, no, 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 my Lord. It is one thing to remember you at death, and it is another thing to have your personal presence in front of me when I am dying. Who knows at the point of death whether I will be able to remember you or not. But right now you are present right in front of me. Therefore, let me give up my body in your presence. And thus Vali went back home, back to Godhead. We saw how Sugriva actually tested Lord Ram twice. Through the throwing of Dundubi's bones and breaking of the sal trees. But Vali, he did not test Lord Ram.
He directly accepted Lord Ram's supremacy. And thus, while he was grateful at the point of death, grateful for Lord Ram to be present in front of him, and thus gave up his body. There is a beautiful description of how Tara was lamenting. She said, Lord Ram, you kill me by the same arrow that you killed Vali. And don't fear of any sin of killing a woman, because I am half of Vali's body. In fact, Vali will not be happy in the heavens without me. Please kill me. I cannot bear the sorrow of separation. You know how much painful it is, because you have also been separated from your spouse. Ram consoled her and said, the wife of a great hero does not lament like this. Please know that eternal time is in control, and Vali has reaped the results of his actions and now has ascended to the higher regions. Seeing the anguish of Tara and Angada, Sugriv became despondent, and with a sorrowful voice he said, O Lord Ram, I have found that the fulfillment of my desires has produced the opposite effect of what I had anticipated. Vali, although had enmity towards me, had never killed me. And the very first opportunity I got to fight with Vali, I killed him. Oh, what a wretch I am. Instead of happiness, I feel repulsion, both to the kingdom and to myself. To atone for my sin, I want to enter into fire and destroy myself along with Vali. There are so many great Vanara heroes. They will help you find Mother Sita. Lord Ram again consoled Sugriv. And he said, your tears of sorrow are sufficient bereavement for the departed soul of your brother. Lament no more. Shake off your grief. It is time to perform duty. The last rites of the departed soul of Vali. And then there is a beautiful description of how Sugriv becomes the monarch of all the Vanaras. Very soon, the 4 months of the monsoon season appears. And Lord Ram tells Sugriv that you can go into Kishkindha Kshetra, be the monarch, the king over there, and I shall remain here in the forest. And after the 4 months are over, you please help me find Sita. At the end of the 4 months, when the air was crispy and the ground was solid, the rainy season was over, and there was no sight or sign of Sugriva coming, Lord Ram became furious. And there is a beautiful description of how Lord Ram sends Lakshman to bring Sugriv back to his senses. Sugriv in those 4 months starts enjoying as the king, along with his wives, the royal opulences, and forgets about his promise to Lord Ram. It is explained that similarly, sometimes the conditioned soul, forgetting the Lord, is trying to enjoy sense gratification in this world. Thus the Lord sends his representative. The Lord sends Lakshman, and Lakshman brings Sugriv out of his intoxication, out of his bewilderment, back to his senses, back to perform his duty, and thus Sugriv comes and surrenders to the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, this mercy of the Lord is explained very beautifully in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Tyaktva sudushtuja surepsita raja lakshmim dharmishta arya vachasaya dagadaranyam maya mrigam daitamipsita manvadavat vande mahapurushate charanaravindam. This mercy of the Lord is glorified in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is explained how tyaktva sudustyaja surepsita raja lakshmim. The Supreme Lord Ram, tyaktva, he gave up the association of Sita Devi, Raja Lakshmim, Sura Ipsita. He gave up the association of Lakshmi Devi, Sita herself, who is even desired by the demigods. Dharmishta Arya Vachasaya Dagadaranyam. And Dharmishta, being so religious, at the words of his father Arya Vachasa, he entered into the forest. Maya Mrigam Daitam Ipsitam Anvadhavat. And Anvadhavat, he ran behind that Maya Mriga, the golden deer of Maricha.
just so that Sita could be abducted. And when Sita is abducted, at that time, the plan of the demigods would be fulfilled. The Lord had promised the demigods that he would appear on the earth to destroy Ravana and his Rakshasa race. So when Sita would be abducted, the Lord was ready to face the separation of his beloved just so that this pastime would unfold and Ravan would be destroyed. Vande Mahapurushate Charanaravindam. Let me pay my obeisances to this Mahapurush, this great personality, the supreme personality of Godhead, Sri Ramchandra. The Acharyas explain that this verse also explains the descent and the incarnation of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Tyaktva Sudushtaja Surepsita Raja Lakshmim. Lord Chaitanya, he also gave up the association of the wonderful devotees in Navadvip. In fact, he took sannyas and gave up the association of his beloved wife, Vishnupriya, Raja Lakshmim. And following the curse of that Brahmana, Dharmeshti Arevachasaya Daga Adaranyam, the Brahmana had cursed him that you will lose all your royal opulences. Thus the Lord was very happy to lose all the opulences around him. Take sannyas. For what purpose? Maya mrigam daitam ipsitaman vadhavat. To run behind the conditioned souls of this world, who themselves are running behind the illusory energy of the Lord. Maya mrigam. The illusory energy is so captivating. And Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sangopangastra Parshadam, along with his devotees and his weapons, the holy name, is running behind the conditioned souls to capture them. So what is our duty? The facilities available for us are unlimited. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Prabhupada has made all the facilities. In fact, it is said he built a house in which the whole world can live. So our rights and facilities are already being given. What is our duty? We simply have to live in the house and cooperate with the other people who are living in that house. In fact, even if we fight with somebody living in that same house that Srila Prabhupada has created, then we'll be given another room. Srila Prabhupada would do that when two devotees would be fighting. So, okay, you go and preach there, you go and preach in another place. But the only thing that is expected from us is we should not want to jump out of the house. It is explained that this boat of ISKCON, this boat of the Krishna consciousness movement, is taking us out of the cycle of birth and death and taking us back to the spiritual world. If somehow in the association of devotees we find it choking and difficult to live here, then what choice do we have? To jump back into the ocean? That's not a choice at all. That's the only thing that is expected from us is to somehow cooperate. That's the only austerity. And enjoy all these facilities that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Prabhupada has created, this house in which the whole world can live. And that is the challenge that our founder Acharya has left us with. This was his last instruction to us. If you love me, your love shall be shown by the way you cooperate with each other to maintain this institution after I am gone. These were his exact words. Your love for me will be shown by the way you cooperate with each other to maintain this institution after I am gone. So we may be living in different rooms and houses of this beautiful house of ISKCON that Srila Prabhupada has created. And the only duty expected from us is to cooperate with the senior Vaishnavas, with other devotees, and thus happily live in this house, in this boat, which is taking us back home, back to Godhead, with Srila Prabhupada as the captain of this ship. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.